Okay, so let's just go ahead and get out of the way. Tell me what's wrong with Pokemon.
Okay, then. First of all, the first 4 hours of the game are cutscenes filled with the worst Pokemon characters I have ever seen. Professor Dude Bro is irritating. Your best friend, Hal, I want to shove off a cliff. Mill, or Millie, whatever the hell her name is, I want to choke her until the life leaves her cold, dead eyes.
Oh, that's hot. I mean, sorry, go on.
I can't stand these characters. I really hate them. Then, I don't like the balance in the game. I'm about 5 or 6 hours in now. It's getting better, but Lord, the opening part of the game is just the most worst mishmash of Pokemon. I start with Litten, and the first thing you fight is a bunch of normal types and an infinite wave of Wingulls that just one-hit KO you. There's nothing you can use against them.
You can get a Pichu.
I couldn't. I've never seen a Pichu.
There's also Magnemite around.
I did find a Magnemite eventually, and I've been using him for about 90% of the battles ever since. Great. So it's just like the previous games I've used Magnemite to death in. Because he is fucking awesome.
I caught a Pichu and raised it up because I wanted Surfer Raichu. Because it's the first time in 20 years I've actually cared about Raichu.
Nothing in this game is really working for me.
Like, for me, the progression in the game is really slow feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the sense of, boy, there's a lot to do before you go to the next, like, story point. No, it's more like, there's a lot of artificial delaying.
Yeah.
Mostly by this one Tauros.
Yeah, that is the worst walling off of the next area mechanic they've ever had, I think.
The Tauros isn't the end of it.
Yeah, the Stantler is even worse. Not Stantler.
Meanwhile, the best artificial walling off is probably Mother 3. Want to cross the line of ants.
Yes.
Yeah, but that's kind of a lampshade, though. Mother 3's self-aware enough to, like, make a joke about it.
That and losing the typical Pokemon narrative structure, which, you know, on the surface is a good thing.
Yeah.
It also makes the game very confusing to figure out if you're making any progress in the story or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of baffling as to what the hell is going on.
Right
now I'm currently beating up some preschoolers.
That's always fun, though.
Wait.
Now,
like
on the positive
game,
side.
Or?
Yeah.
No. Scott, we're not talking about Pokemon anymore. What I will give the game is that presentation-wise, it is polished. It is the best-looking, best presentation. I can tell they put a lot of time and effort into making this game look and feel top-notch.
Which also makes it barely work on the regular 3DS hardware.
Really?
In anything more than a single battle, the frame rate drops to about half.
Oh, well, yeah, actually, I have noticed that.
Yeah. Like, this feels a lot like Smash Brothers in that, sure, it'll play on your existing 3DS, but it's really meant for new 3DS.
Hmm. Also, Team Skull is the best team they've had since Rocket.
I like how in their cutscenes, you can just, like, leave the game sitting there and they will just, like, dance forever.
I just, like, keep responding to, like, who the hell are you guys?
Yeah.
I've never seen you before. Yeah, they're incredibly endearing.
Team Skull is more fun than any of the evil organizations.
Yeah.
In quite a while.
Well, a big part of it is that you can just mess with them by, again, having them dance forever and acting like you have no, like you've never heard of them before.
I also like there's a stronger implication than this that there is only two Team Skull grunts.
Yeah.
Like, there's not an army of them. It's just the same two assholes you keep running into everywhere.
It's like Biggs and Wedge.
Yeah.
No, there's, like, The game is well made.
There are some
just conscious choices in how it's executed that are troubling, I guess.
Yeah.
There are a couple things in here that are kind of annoying me, like some doors in the trader school that don't go anywhere, and also the light switches that you can't flip.
Light switches?
Those are strange complaints.
There are modeled light switches like on the walls of your house, and you can't turn them on and off. Like, why bother modeling them if you can't do anything with them?
Well, I mean,
Chekhov's light switch. There's a light switch. I better be able to flip it.
All kinds of things are, you know, important to different people. It's not for us to judge. No, I am 18 and a half hours into the game. I've only gotten the fifth one of those Z crystals. So, like, that... And I'm not, like, intentionally trying to play slow, either. It's just taken me that long to get to that point in the game. Where if you're equating the island trials to, like, typical gym battles, 18 hours in, I could have finished any previous Pokemon game if I really wanted to. Like, finish the story.
Yeah.
You know, I appreciate the game taking more time, but I want it to feel more natural in how it's going about it, I guess.
Yeah. Other than just dragging things out to drag things out.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, Nurse Joy.
I think probably a good 30% of the playtime I have logged on here is cutscenes.
Trying to get a female Litten took forever, what with all the cutscene you had to go through.
Now, Fort Max, you've seen what Litten's final evolution looks like. Why would you pursue a female one of those?
So you can breed them and trade them.
Eh.
Who says I'm not going to just keep pressing B?
Fair enough.
Press control to fire.
Use a boost to chase.
But having seen the Z move with the fire crystal, and that it's essentially just a Kamehameha, I'm kind of content to let my cat become a big, muscly wrestle man. It's like Dragon Ball Z as fuck.
Cat Broly.
Well, I was calling the move Cat Mehameha.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
No, the only thing I would have been trying to, or been tempted to try to reset for to get a female one would be the water starter. But on the other hand, I don't want the water starter, so it's no big deal.
Nobody wants the water starter.
Everybody really just wants the owl.
Except I don't like the last form. I don't like ghost types either, so.
I don't like its middle form. Its middle form looks like a douche. Because I can get one and raise it to the middle evolution and call it Zane. Maybe once Wonder Trade opens up, and you know, I can start getting stuff off of that.
Now, speaking of Power Rangers...
Wonder Trade is open.
Speaking of Power Rangers, man, that was a terrible last episode.
I haven't watched Dino Charge since, like, the second episode since it came back.
I don't think I've watched it since we took Super Hero Time off the air.
Yeah, I think that would be about the same point.
It was, like, everything up to the last episode was at least okay. The last episode spent half of the time pulling shit out of its ass.
I've done that before.
Like, oh.
Hey, Mickey, remind me never to use the salad tongs at your house.
Or the corkscrew. So this should be where Hey Mickey chimes in with corks. We just have twist offs.
Cut us in a box. Smash the bottle open.
Yeah. Takes a machete and cuts off the neck of it.
I christened so many ships at this house.
Oh my God.
If you know what he means.
Large vessels full of semen.
Oh.
Anyway, I don't hate Pokemon Moon by any stretch. I was saddened to learn yesterday that orange clothing is exclusive to Sun.
You can still get your version.
I know, with the dye shop in the plaza.
Yeah.
But that's a pain. I want to just go buy orange things.
I know. It's a sickness.
Hmm. Oh, by the way, Titans Return Hot Rod is fairly nice.
That's good to know.
Loose hips, and mine has a loose neck socket, but some of that can be fixed.
Loose Your hips mom's don't loose lie. Hips can't be fixed.
No.
Some of my favorite things to play with have loose hips.
Actually, all three new molds are pretty nice. Double Cross is probably the most boring one of them.
And How's Getaway?
He got away. I said, get away. My Trigger Happy, the hinges for the big arm guns seem to have been slightly mispinned, so they can't actually click straight forward in jet mode. They're both slightly askew.
Lame.
It kind of bothers me. I'm going to try to get a replacement when the wave is more commonly available, which will hopefully still be while the $10 price point is there.
I would kind of doubt it. The Christmas wave is always in short supply.
Well, one way or another, I'll probably come up with one.
Maybe. Soundwave is okay, by the way. Not that you care, but...
No, I really don't. Also got the new Titan Masters in today.
Ah.
Fingry is a little puppy bat monster thing.
Yes, he is.
And turns into a little dragon, which I actually wasn't aware of previously.
A very Fangry dragon.
No, it has more of a beak. Taro is kind of terrible.
You mean Swoop?
Or Strafe, if you prefer.
No one prefers
the,
that.
The Titan Masters, the Titan Master's head is actually modeled after G1 Strafe.
I thought he was going to be a Swoop. That's weird.
No. The big face is Swoopish, but the Titan Master's head...
Oh. That's a weird little double reference.
Yeah. I think they were making fun of that time they put G1 Strafe's face on movie Swoop's package. Whoops.
Face on womp. Package.
But I really like Sawback. Like, Fangry is really good at being a little tiny Fangry, but Sawback's actually just kind of good at being what it's supposed to be. Like, you know, the beast, it's got a good beast mode. The shield mode is a little on the thick side, but it's convincing.
Your mom's a little on the thick side. She never needs convincing.
And even the odd little, what I'm calling like a lion battle pod vehicle mode, it's weird and stupid looking a little bit, but I also kind of like it because it's kind of weird and stupid looking. Like it just kind of works overall. Also, the Titan Master is orange and yellow, and I can't not like that. I do wish the robot face was more, you know, a lion face instead of just a dude.
Well, what you gonna do?
But yeah, Wave 3, from what I've handled of it, is generally pretty good.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Just really the one Titan Master so far that's not good.
And Getaway, where you did not even buy.
Oh yeah, I keep forgetting that's even part of Wave 3.
Poor Scott.
Hopefully Kickback and Bumblebee will also be good.
Waiting so patiently.
Somebody call my name. Oh, I was asleep, sorry.
Superhero Time presents that one episode of Star Trek. With Chris.
Real ladies have the cells, boys.
Hey, Mickey.
Why, I'm no spy. I'm just a plain, simple tractor trailer.
Scott.
Every time I poop, it's just going to float around.
And Fort Max.
I'm gay, and I'm a little straight for Bashir.
This week on that one episode of Star Trek, let's talk about Transformers and Pokemon.
And then we can talk about Star Trek Online.
Does it have Pokemon?
It has little pets you can collect, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
What kind of pets?
And it can, and it has tribble breeding. He actually can breed tribbles.
So, and Epo breeding.
And they actually will give you powers and stuff if you like breed rare ones.
Can you like go to the changeling home world and make one of them a pet?
No, but you can get Borg tribbles.
Yeah, I've got one. It's awesome. It makes a modem sound occasionally.
Will it assimilate the other tribbles?
No, but there are cannibal tribbles that will eat your other tribbles.
You kind of need it to keep the population in check, though.
Yeah.
It's the circle of life. Tribbles in, tribbles out.
It's the soft, furry circle of life.
I want some kind of, like, retcon with tribbles that they're really just hairy single cells and they breed so fast because they just keep splitting.
Yeah, I think that's kind of how it works.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they're born pregnant, and that's all they do. So, yeah.
Hairy single cells and look at Dragon Ball Z, like, want ad. Like on Craigslist.
I'm perfect.
Hairy single cell seeks android.
Must be 18 or over.
No fats, no femmes.
Android 18? Huh? Okay.
No, oh. No, he'll take a 17 if he has to. But 16, that's out of the question.
Yeah, depending on the state, too, so yeah.
No, I have to imagine Cell is probably one of those, you know, one of the type that is, like, completely hairless.
Oh, my God.
You're stalling.
Actually, I'm trying to make Scott uncomfortable, and it seems to be working.
No, not uncomfortable. Like, I care. Look, I full body wax, so you're not going to make me feel weird about it.
But you never pull the wax off, though, Scott.
Well, yes, I like the protective layer it gives me. It keeps my shirts from riding up.
You change your scent every month at Yankee Candle. This month, you're fresh linen.
Is this a new car? Why, no, it's not. Yeah, so what an emotional roller coaster this episode was.
So we're doing real life from Voyager, and we all have different opinions on it.
I thought it was really good, and I really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed watching the whole episode.
I thought it was half good, but I think it's very interesting from a meta perspective.
For Matt?
It was a bad episode.
I found it intensely boring.
Which is the worst type.
You know, Scott, being that I'm the one who edits this and has the master recordings, I could just remove you completely from the episode.
That's fine. I'll go play video games. I'll go play Star
Trek. Oh, no, I'm not letting you leave the podcast call. I'm just going to edit you out of the show.
All right, I'll show you. I'll just close Skype. What the fuck is not working? How do you do that?
You unplug your computer and it stays on.
Yeah, I can't take off my headset. Nope, still on. Shit.
That's all that wax. Told you to let that cool before you put the headset on.
Well, you know, it's no fun if it's cold.
So, Mickey... You have a fair and balanced take on this episode. Why don't you...
I'm the Fox News of this podcast.
Also, I'm pretty sure this episode was your idea, so take responsibility.
All right, so let's open up to the 1950s in space, where the world's most perfect white family is waiting for Daddy to come down and go to work.
I wonder if anybody has taken this and overlaid the Leave It to Beaver music on it.
That would be perfect, actually.
Yeah.
But they're hilariously awful. I want bad things to happen to them all, and thankfully they do.
Yeah, just wait.
But Father is coming down the stairs to go to work, and it's the doctor. What's going on here? Why does the doctor have a family on Earth?
Yeah, or we assume it's Earth. But I think it's really interesting how this set, it does look like a 80s, 60s, 1980s house, but somehow still 24th century. It's very weird looking.
An 80s, 60s, 24th century house.
Yes. No joke.
Is that a King Crimson song?
Oh.
But no, the set design is actually kind of brilliant in how it looks Star Trek futury, but really retro.
Right. It looks like a sitcom. Right. I personally think that's one of the first things in this episode I noticed is, okay, they really nailed something in this episode. They tried to say something, and I think they fucking nailed it.
So, the Doctor goes to work, and he materializes in the sick bay. And Kes is there wearing her 7 of 9 proto jumpsuit. Poor Matt's just like, she is.
I was just wondering why she was dressed like 7 of 9. Or is that really 7 of 9 dressed like Kes?
Technically, yes.
Kessin of 9. So apparently the Doctor has made a holographic family. Hooray.
What could go wrong?
Well, the thing is, he's too shit-eating grin pleased with himself about it, though. That's the real problem.
He's the Doctor.
Like, the smug. I mean, he goes to warp factor 9 with the smug in this episode. Until that filthy smug smile is wiped off his face by B'Elanna. But we'll get to that.
All right, let's cut straight to the B plot, which is really more of a D plot. Because, man, it's really obvious. They had the idea for the Doctor's episode and realized it only took about 30 minutes of time.
A sitcom length.
Yeah. It's like, shit, we got to pad the rest of this hour out.
So we'll have Don Paris do something stupid.
So we'll have a space anomaly, because that's Star Trek.
Sure.
I like the setup for this, though, where, like, you know, Captain's Log, we've met these really awesome people, and they've invited us to their science station to show us their science.
It's going to be rad.
Yeah, it's going to be great. We're going to meet new people. We're going to explore new life, new civilizations, you know, Star Trek shit.
So then we cut to the bridge, and straight to Tuvok going, Kim... could you do your fucking job and tell us that the space station is there? And Kim's like, sorry. We should be getting here, I guess, probably.
If you could be bothered to look at your monitor, you would see something. It's like, oh, Jesus, man.
Passive-aggressive Vulcans are the best Vulcans.
Like pre-Ponfar syndrome or something.
Tuvok has had enough of this shit on the ship.
I serve with Hikaru Sulu. Fuck all y'all.
No, I'm stuck with Janeway.
You know, when you put it like that, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Who'd he piss off to get on this ship?
Well, if I remember right, he left Starfleet in between serving on the Excelsior and, you know, when we pick up with him in the modern age.
That is
well, true. You know, once you serve with Sulu, there's really no way to top it. You already achieved the height of Starfleet, so.
Yeah, no fucking kidding. I would totally be on Sulu's crew.
Okay, so Kim realizes, the space station's not there, Captain.
Debris field.
And so everyone looks worried at their monitors and trying to figure out what this debris field could possibly be.
Right. The space station.
It takes them a little while to figure out what's going on. It's kind of like you guys never seen a blown up space station before? No? Okay. All right. So, yeah, then they get in there and they're like, one thing I don't like is like they make this big deal. They even name the alien race and then we never hear about them ever again. They were going to meet them and people died. Janeway has like 1 minute of like, all those scientists are dead. And then, anyway.
60 people.
Then an interesting space anomaly shows up, and she forgets all about those people who
died. She sure does. Oh, my God.
Now, that's some mood whiplash.
All right, this is a
tragedy beyond compare. Ooh, shiny.
They'll see the anomaly soon enough. Let's cut back down to the sick bay, where the Doctor is getting his checkup from B'Elanna.
Oh, that's right. And he's a hologram.
That's right. And she's making passive-aggressive insults at him, like, you want to better yourself. Let me make sure you didn't fuck yourself up.
Right. You're just angry. You can't make a braid in your hair like I have.
Girl. This is not working for your hair.
I think the Doctor could program in hair extensions if he wanted to.
This braid... It's just like you went to a Renaissance festival and you got cornered and you couldn't make an excuse not to have your hair braided.
I like the fact that it's just the one, so it looks like a it's like a, one of those ropes you pull for like a doorbell.
Boom, no, she's boom. She's in the midst of her Padawan training.
Oh man, a lightsaber in the shape of a batleth. Oh yeah.
So she's going to be killing all the kids in a few seasons, isn't she?
No, in a few minutes. Hold on.
Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to engineering.
Fort Max, thoughts on that?
Accurate.
Okay, so. Well, Kes and Doctor are talking or whatever. Anyway, Milana finds about his holographic family. She's like, oh, well, that's interesting.
I want to meet him.
It thinks it's people.
Anyway, so the whole part of the fake family is the Doctor sees that other people have families. Therefore, if he crafts himself a family experience, he'll better understand them and can be a better doctor.
Which makes sense. You know, he's
unfortunately, he based all his knowledge on families comes from old sitcom reruns.
Yes. Yeah, apparently.
Leave it to Picardo.
I would.
So, she and Kes get invited to dinner because there's no way in hell she's going to miss this shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she's like, I like how she has to think about it, though. It's like she has something else she'd rather do. And then she, and then it crosses her mind, wait a minute, this could be the greatest shit show of all time. Like, this will give me even one more thing to hate on this goddamn ship.
So we cut over to the dinner scene. And I absolutely love the woman playing the Doctor's wife.
Yes.
She has this Donna Reed bullshit down pat.
Yes.
She could not be more fake.
Yeah.
I love the kids, her.
The kids do a good job, too. I have to admit, I honestly love the acting in this episode. I think it's perfect and spot on. I love the acting.
It's so Brady Bunch.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the only thing I could think of. It's weird how they made it look 60s, but 24th century. How did they do that?
Good production designer.
Yeah, it's rad. Oh, also, their house is pretty cool. I love their fireplace. It's like all backlit and shit. It's awesome.
Is Zimmerman still the production designer on Voyager?
Probably.
Yeah. If so, this is probably down to his work getting that house to look the right way.
Well, he nailed it if it's him.
So,
the Wikipedia.
The family is just talking in circles here, giving each other compliments on how great they all are. Everyone's just the best, and the Doctor is the best, and the kids are the best, and Belana says, just fuck this, Peter, stop. I'm leaving before I get diabetes from this shit.
Yeah, she literally said their blood sugar's getting too high. I'm surprised she didn't flip over the table, personally.
Oh, that would have been amazing.
He's going to, like, clean on right. Also, the poor boy.
Well,
the,
I don't know. Wig. No one was reading poetry at her.
Yeah.
The poor boy in the wig he has to wear. I mean, because we're, like, you know, in Netflix, we can actually see details now. You can see his hairline where they put, like, the plaster.
Yeah, the lace front.
Yes.
Speaking of details, Cody's tattoo is looking awfully smudged this episode.
No, that's so tattoo. Boring.
So, Blana's forehead looks funny too. It's like it's not really ridged; it's just shaded. It looks so like two dimensional.
They blew all their budget on the set, and so they had to cut corners on makeup
and the guest actors.
So Blana explains to the Doctor, "Look, if you want to have a real family, let me get access to your personal shit, and I'll fix this right up." And so the Doctor, being an idiot, agrees.
Well, not immediately. Not immediately. He has to think about it. Although I would point out that Belana pauses the program. They're all eating dinner. She actually says computer freeze program, which is seems kind of rude. I mean, that's like walking in on somebody's Xbox while they're in the middle of playing a game and just turning it off. Yeah. It's like, excuse me?
Oh, I was living this.
I haven't saved it in 38 years.
All right, so.
Yeah.
Look out on the horizon. It's a big space anomaly. Admittedly, it's kind of a cool-looking space anomaly.
really, I actually thought it looked kind of cheap and crappy. I mean, it's just 90 CGI, I guess, is why I'm being all.
Well, I mean, in terms of design-wise, it's not your typical white light or just a blue cloud or something. There's actually some shape going on to it. I mean,
well, design-wise, it seems to just rip off the concept art of black holes expelling gamma rays out of its poles.
Yes, it is.
So it's not exactly creative either.
I'm not saying it's creative. I'm saying it's not a shape you see in Star Trek very often.
Right. And it's got that debris field, which adds all this extra detail to it.
All I'm saying is I don't hate how it was designed.
Sure.
I hate that it's stupid, but, you know.
It bounces off their shields. It bounced off their shields. Doing.
Yeah, apparently it's a giant energy anomaly that's kinetic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And connected to subspace somehow.
And it only hit, like, one side of their shields?
Yeah, I think Tuvok said, like,
well, that's because it bounced off.
I guess?
Yeah.
But Chakotay's not afraid to see it. He's never seen anything like that before.
Oh, he's so brave. That's what I love about Chakotay. He's so brave. He's almost as brave as Apple. Almost as brave as Apple is removing a headphone jack. That's courage.
You have to be brave to open a casino in space.
Oh my god! Wow. And yeah, and here's the moment when Catherine goes, "Man, those poor 60 scientists." Oh, look.
Uh huh. Jamie's motivation is like, look, science, 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 science. And Chakotay's like, maybe we could use this to fuel the replicator so I can get some fresh food. She's like, yeah, maybe. Science. Science.
Now, in fairness, she is in a science ship in Starfleet, which is an exploratory organization. So, yeah, she's probably predisposed to being caring about science. It's a long-range science vessel. It's not my fault.
You know, it sure is well-armed for a long-range science vessel.
Well, they have to defend themselves against all that science out there.
Well, how do you explain the Oberth class?
No one can explain the Oberth class. I think we've gone over that before. God's mistake.
Okay, so the doctor was explaining to Cass, like, well, I let B'Elanna miss the program. So, and she edited some random probability doohickeys. So now what's going to happen is going to be determined by a D20.
All right. Roll for initiative.
One.
Fuck.
Yeah, apparently, B'Elanna just programmed it into roll nothing but ones.
Yes. Yes. Rolling but ones.
So let's head home after a hard day's work of doctoring.
You know, with most other episodes, the rolling the ones would include the doctor, someone trying to kill the doctor.
Yeah. That's such a cool house. It's like surrounded by trees. I totally live there.
All right, so the doctor beams into his home, and it's a wreck. His wife is now stressed and running out the door.
Her hair is so much better, though.
Yeah.
Yes, it's human.
I mean, like, assuming the doctor designed the look of his family, it's understandable why all their hair looks so terrible. Because what does the doctor know about hair?
Damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a hairdresser.
So, apparently, it was his job to make dinner. It's his job to get his bitch daughter to Parisi Square's practice.
Because that's
and she's lost her goddamn hammer. Or something. So, I'm not clear on how you play Parisi Squares. I just know that
it's not just a mallet, it's an ion mallet.
Yes.
I really want to know more about this.
Everybody does. And that's why I love how the Parisi Squares is this totally undefined dangerous sport.
Yeah. I just kinda mention it's like zero gravity high ally.
Wasn't there a Next Generation episode or something?
Yara was wearing a Parisi Squares outfit at one point.
Yeah, I heard her team get raped, though. Ugh.
It was a completely failed match.
There were rape referees.
And throughout all the scene, this horrible Sega Genesis music is being blared at like 130 decibels throughout the house.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is part where I'm starting to love this episode. I love this episode so much.
But the son is upstairs playing the music, and Dr. Dad yells up, "You better turn down that noise." But, you know, the son says, "You're just jealous because it's the Klingon boys."
Yes. He's listening to Klingon music. Holy shit, guys. We get to listen to Klingon pop music in this episode. How rad is that?
A Klingon boy band.
It's awesome.
Wonder what the Klingon version of the Beatles was like.
They probably had better teeth. And better haircuts, too.
All you need is Warnock.
Though I will say, we probably now know what sort of music Valana listened to growing up.
Mm-hmm. So rad.
I bet she wasn't into it, though, because she always didn't like, you know, the Klingon side of her family. The Klingon aspects, I think, always made her uncomfortable or something.
Oh, she's destined to be miserable no matter where she's at.
All right, so the doorbell rings, and it's two snotty-looking Klingon teenagers.
Holy shit, Klingon teenagers, guys.
Yes, Klingagers.
This is so awesome.
We're here to go do drugs with your son, sir. Come on up!
Large and cacoth.
And the scene finally falls apart with the daughter screaming, "I want my mommy," higher and higher, over and over again, until it cuts to commercial. Yeah. That entire scene is just glorious.
Yes.
Yes.
That's what I said. I fell in love with this episode during this scene. Because it's all happening at once. It's all perfectly balanced. Oh, my God. It's fucking great. And he almost loses his temper, but manages to retain it.
It's a scene in Voyager that only could be accomplished with Robert Picardo.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
This entire episode could only work with Robert Picardo.
Yes. I mean, for a variety of reasons, but the competent acting of the scene could only be accomplished in this show with Robert Picardo.
Yes.
Oh, dude, we get to see teenage Klingons.
Who aren't so... Alexander in Deep Space Nine.
Right, yeah, I mean, there's like the average... I can only imagine these are average Klingon teenagers.
Yeah, typical Klingon teenagers.
Yeah, like they're like all gangly and skinny, but they're still Klingons. Oh, I love this.
So...
I want to see, like, a typical Klingon 5-year-old now.
I don't...
Oh, Alexander.
He's... No. No.
So, yeah. I like how we went from Leave it to Beaver in the first scene straight to Roseanne in the second.
Married with children.
From perfect to everything's a disaster at full volume.
I kind of wish B'Elanna would have reprogrammed this to be more, you know, Perfect Strangers.
Even like living with his cousin?
Oh, I know. Dr. Lewis can't lose.
Oh. Wow.
I mean, I'd watch it, but, you know, that's a bad it's a bad joke.
Yes.
Synchronized watches.
Synchronized comp patches.
You know what this episode's been missing that it sorely needs?
Tom Paris? Nope.
And Neelix!
Yeah, I need some Neelix. Oh, just a dash of spice to kick it up a notch.
Now, but, did I hear right, and Neelix identified one of the ingredients in this food as grub meal?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, I kind of like Neelix in this scene.
Because he's just kind being of an asshole?
Yes. Yeah. Because
specifically an asshole to Tom.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
So Tom comes up and is like, "So what's for dinner?"
Leftovers.
Casserole. Again, for the fourth day in a row. Well, if you don't like it, use your replicator rations. I'm out. Enjoy your fucking casserole. God
Sassy. This is good, too, because it's the only involvement of Neelix in the episode.
Yeah. Neelix would have been a lot better if he was handled lighter like this.
Yeah.
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 No, I only thing is, between Tuvok's mood and Neelix's, are they having like a lover spat right now behind the scenes we don't know about?
I'm making that beta canon now.
Thank you.
Well, off to memory beta.
Do the behind-the-scenes relationship effects of Tuvok and Neelix.
So Tom carries his plate full of shit.
ground up worms.
Over to B'Elanna. And notice that she quickly hides what she's reading.
Now, I like this scene for several reasons. One, he is being so unabashedly rapey. And second, she's just like any other woman. Now in 2016, she looks like anybody else just reading her cell phone at lunch. It struck me how 20 years ago that would have been looked funny, her looking at this little device in her hand while she's eating. But now it's ubiquitous.
Star Trek predicts the future. Next thing you know, the bell rats will happen.
Star Trek makes the future.
Hell yeah.
So what is B'Elanna reading?
She's Zappy reading Klingon romance novel.
Yeah, it's a Harlequin novel from Kronos. And it looks pretty amazing. It's not a Tingler, but...
Holy crap. Now we get to see Klingon romance novels. This is the best episode of all time.
And I'm just left wondering why the ship's database has Klingon romance novels in it.
Because it doesn't have Klingon on board?
It didn't originally.
Maybe she wrote it. It's fan fiction.
That would explain the dialogue.
Really it's when they start flirting each other using engineering dialogue.
Yes.
What would you define as technical? Oh, I'd say something with lots of rules and lines. Protractors. Ooh, that gets me hot.
Why don't you calibrate my nipples?
And then Tom steals her phone.
Yeah, what a dick.
Oh, but thank God we're saved by another anomaly. Let's
I don't know. We could have had more of that book read.
Agreed. I want to see a Holo novel of it. Are you kidding?
But the problem is it would have had the Voyager cast.
That's true.
I wonder how many Klingons die during mating rituals.
Not enough.
It depends how heavy their furniture is.
You want to date Klingons with like wicker furniture?
The plastic lawn furniture from Tokyo.
Yeah. It's from IKEA. Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, sorry.
So instead of being a bloodbath, it looks like a Toku fight just ran through.
Yeah. Bloodbath and beyond.
There we go. Okay, so they're looking at the anomaly and they're whinging on about science and probing it, and Chakotay won't shut the fuck up about collecting the plasma.
Yeah, they're going to probe the white hole.
So I don't really get Chakotay's thing about we're going to collect plasma to power the replicators. That doesn't make a great deal of sense to me.
I don't think the writers of Star Trek actually understood what plasma was at this point.
Yeah, the way they talk about it is like this magical force. And
I'm
it's
not
just...
sure they weren't aware that it wasn't a component of blood. Like, if we collect some of the space blood protein...
We can have some rare steaks.
Ooh.
I mean, as a Star Trek nerd, I really don't know what the hell they needed these particular wispy particles to have to collect the Bussard collectors to run their ship.
They can't use the ship's Bussard collectors because it will contaminate the plasma.
Because there's too much energy in the ship.
It's so fucking stupid.
Okay, so...
So stupid.
They want to collect the plasma particles to power the ship, but the ship has too much power to collect the plasma particles.
Thank you.
This is the worst.
So goddamn stupid. And the thing is...
I try to forgive a lot of the technobabble just... based on science has evolved a lot in 30 years, like the common understanding. So they probably were using words they had no idea what it really meant. I try to make allowances for
but
that.
But didn't Star Trek have people whose job it was to make sure it at least would kind of sort of make sense?
Obviously, those people were fired before Voyager went on the air.
Although I kind of recall learning about plasma like, you know, in the 90s in middle school.
Yeah, it's a middle school level science.
But you were in middle school in the 90s. Voyager was being written in the 90s by people who went to middle school 30 years before that.
Okay.
Wow, that's pretty tight.
No, my only point here is that I usually try to be forgiving of bad science in Star Trek because of the circumstances. But like this, I just cannot even begin to make any sense of.
No.
That's all I was trying to say.
Yeah, and this is such basic crap, and it beats their own. It interferes with their own canon, which annoys me. It's like if you'd have changed some of the technobabble slightly, we would have been fine with it. But you had to use don't use real world things when you mean technobabble.
That's why they started making up units of data storage.
Exactly. When you start saying, "Oh, data can hold 500 megabytes," it's like, you know, who gives a shit? You know, come on, don't do that.
Well, at least the 16 quadrillion bits thing still holds up at this point.
Yeah. Well, for the next 10 years.
Look, just hold on.
Then we won't have computers anymore.
Yeah, 10 years, we'll all be throwing sticks and rocks at each other. But anyway.
All right. So the plan is let's send Paris out in a shuttle to collect enough energy for us to have power the replicators forevers.
Because a shuttlecraft can hold all that energy and stuff.
Huh?
Jesus goddamn fucking Christ.
Oh, it gets better because Paris goes down to sick bay for the doctor to give him a booster shot against radiation.
I mean, yeah, there are certain things you can do to help, like, inoculate yourself from cellular damage and stuff, but it's whatever. I'm okay with that.
But no,
I don't think you can administer. Rays. I don't think you can administer adrenaline ahead of time to protect someone from radiation.
Well, I don't know.
Full of ibuprofen, you'll be fine. Get out there.
Yes, it'll destroy your liver, but you'll feel great.
They can replicate a new liver,
right.
Especially with all those particles he's going to be bringing back.
No kidding.
Look, this shot will protect you against most of the radiation, and whatever it doesn't protect you against, we can give you new ones.
Actually, now think about it. I bet you the doctor just pumped his blood full of air.
Well, he'd make it about halfway down the corridor to
take care of you.
Oh my god. Bring it!
Yeah, I mean, isn't the hypo spray, isn't the method that uses, like, a compressed air delivery system to get the stuff in without an actual injection?
Yeah, it's more or less the same thing that they can do now.
Yeah. Again, Star Trek predicts the future, or creates it.
That just seems like, that's just asking for an embolism, if you ask me.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, who wouldn't ask for an embolism?
But yeah, anyway, the doctor does give Tom permission to go be completely reckless and kill himself.
Like he needs permission.
Right.
Tom's like, all right, groovy, bye.
See you, old man.
Big family, asshole. So the doctor is calling a family meeting because he's figured out how to fix everything. So mom is there and daughter is there. And now where's Junior? Well, he's sleeping in the middle of the afternoon.
Cool. I like him already.
And he comes down wearing, I don't know, it's supposed to look like a Klingon jacket, but it kind of looks like he's went to like Marshall's and ripped the arms off a lady's fur coat.
And I kind of think that's intentional.
I think he looks a lot more like Prince Johann.
Like, I think it's intentional.
Yes, he does.
Uh-huh. Yep.
He's friends with the Smurfs.
I think it's kind of intentional, though, that his Klingon outfit looks, like, super fake.
Well, yeah, because he's a human wearing it, and he probably made it himself, the dork.
Or he got it at Hot Topic.
Oh, I love the fact that 24th century Hot Topic has Klingon clothes. Oh, I love it.
So itchy.
I love this episode.
Just take a moment to imagine a goth Klingon. Like black eyeliner and shit.
Okay, so okay. I'll raise you one. Goth Vulcan.
Oh, that's so hot. If I get to Paul looking
sad.
Goth. Oh, God. So logically sad. I can explain to you why life is meaningless.
It's only logical that I cut myself.
Oh, that's a fucking lot. Damaged logical. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Go on.
The doctor's big plan to save the family is rules.
Lots of them. And a schedule.
He will tightly govern every single aspect of their lives, and everyone will be perfect again. To which Junior rebels.
No.
Because that's what rebel-y teenagers do, is they rebel. Ribble. R-I-B-B-B-B-L-E.
Yeah.
And even mom's going like, whoa, hold up a second here.
You're rescheduling my lecture night. somehow, even though it's my job.
I called your employer and set it up.
Right. I want to jump in and say how awesome this scene is, because he comes in, hands all this information to them. Of course, yeah, Jeffrey rebels. The daughter's like, but I want to be in this other team. And he's like, no, you can't. It's too dangerous, but she wants to do it. And the mom is completely legit. Oh, the other thing is that he's like says, oh, Jeffrey, you can't have Klingon friends anymore. That set it off.
That gave me pause a little bit, just because, like, yeah, objectively speaking, Klingons probably would be a bad influence on a human child.
Right.
But at the same time, it's kind of
super racist.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is, they call him out on it. And even the little girl goes, oh, well, he's like, oh, we all have to make sacrifices. And she's like, well, what about you? What are you sacrificing? Oh, I'm going to make dinner. So you already do that. They call him on his bullshit, and it's beautiful. Won't you find some nice Vulcan friends? I was like, why don't you go find some nice Jewish girls?
Jeez. No, he said find Vulcans, not Ferengis.
Ooh, wow. All right, so send all your angry little letters to XV. Now, yeah, this is where the mom jumps in and goes, Kenneth, because apparently that's the doctor's name in this fantasy.
He's Ken.
He kind of looks like Ken.
And I like how she doesn't like get all pissy. She goes, well, look, that might be a little unreasonable. We need to talk about this. You know, and of course he goes, well, how dare you back talk me?
We're supposed to be united against the children.
Right.
I mean, the enemy.
And at which point she, again, totally legit says, you didn't even discuss this with me. If we're going to be a team, you have to talk about these things with me, because I'm an equal partner in this. And we're both the parents. And it never crossed his mind to even do that. And I was like, this is the greatest fucking scene in Star Trek.
Which, you're right, that's great, because he was treating them all as a toy, basically.
Yeah.
Right.
That he was in control of, and now he's lost control of it.
And that has been very clearly illustrated to him now.
Yeah.
He lost control the moment B'Elanna started tinkering with the buttons.
Yes.
Right. But it also points out, you know, in the meta-narrative, that your family and people are their own people, and you can't treat them that way. The message they convey here, I think, is just great.
And it's followed up, though, with the daughter saying, you know, I'll switch teams because I know you're just trying to keep me safe, and, you know, I still love you anyway.
Even though you fucked everything up royally.
Yeah.
Right, but because he has this little heart-to-heart where he goes, look, I'm just trying to make things better because I love you guys and I want things to be better, so I'm trying. And she recognizes that and comforts him. I think it's great. What a great scene.
Which also shows that your family will love you even if you are a fuck-up and an asshole and racist.
Yeah, tell me about it. Although the little girl apparently was playing Precy Squares against people 3 years older than her. She must be a badass.
Yeah, she's kind of scary.
She's
like, have you seen Kick-Ass? She's that little girl.
She's who?
The little girl from Kick-Ass.
Oh. Yeah. Well, she curses a lot less than this, though.
For now, until B'Elanna edits the program again.
Right, yeah. She comes home with her girlfriend, you know, and wearing flannel.
All right. Oh, shit. Time for the B plot again.
All right.
Okay, so the shuttle is collecting some bullshit, plasma. Oh, no, it's a second Eddie, more powerful than before. Look at the Eddie go. Then.
Damn it, Eddie.
And then Eddie just sucks Paris in, and they both.
I never saw that episode of Family Matters.
Eddie, are you okay? Are you okay, Eddie?
Stop! No. XV, why didn't you invite Don on this show?
Okay, so they absorb. Some
and hey,
particles.
That's a Don reference. I don't have to beep out.
Oh. All right, so Paris disappears into the CGI.
Into the Shadow Realm.
Yes. And then Voyager attempts to contact him by turning the AM radio dial back and forth.
And then Janeway, being the genius, she says, change it to FM and see what happens. Oh, my.
Thank you, Janeway. We couldn't have done this without you. You're the best character. We all love you.
He's the captain. She's the smartest.
Captain Mary Sue Janeway.
cold.
You know, all that being true, of course, but after watching those clips of the first woman playing Janeway,
it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot worse. I actually did learn to appreciate the Janeway we got a little bit.
Yeah, because Kate Mulgrew herself is actually a good actress.
Yes.
She just got stuck in a bad show.
I have enjoyed watching her in other things from before the time of Voyager.
And after.
I don't know that I've actually seen her in anything after.
She's in Orange is the New Black, which I don't like as a show, but she does a great job in it.
Yeah, she does.
She plays a Russian.
I could see that.
Like a big, heavy Russian cook.
Okay, that's a little harder to see.
She does it very well.
Okay.
Yeah. You need to watch a few episodes. It's awesome.
Well, her performance is. The show is pretty bleh. All right, but one thing I do like is this netherworld that Paris ended up in. It's kind of pretty.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Badlands.
Yeah, but sunnier.
I think I think King Kai's planet is somewhere around here.
It is. So, like, Goku's, like, running by in the foreground or something.
We'll Photoshop it in later.
Hey, Cosmic Duck.
Yeah, seriously.
But he doesn't do Photoshop requests for us anymore, apparently. Sad. We probably offended him away from the show.
Damn it!
Why do we hurt the ones we love?
Shut up, idiot.
Except for the fact they need to be hurt. Alright, so the doctor's doing sad doctoring in sick bay.
The trombone music in the background.
It's the Charlie Brown music. Kes wanders in, or should I say, she slinks in.
Yeah.
Set to some 40s music.
Yeah, and if you look really closely, you actually see some meth on her.
Oh. Anyway, so she says, Doctor, you seem sad. Why don't you take the rest of the day off? Because nothing's going on here, and I really don't have any more lines to give.
But she is skinny as crap in these episodes. It's kind of weird looking.
Beth, you know.
Also, I really don't like Kes with long hair.
Yeah. Is that her real hair? Is that a wig? It's got to be a wig, right? Wig.
Yeah. I think what I hate about it is that she went from her short little pixie cut to this giant, voluminous drag queen wig. Like, there's no middle ground there. Like, if they want to cover her ears, just, like, drop her hair down to her shoulders, give her the whole Dinah's Jennifer Aniston thing going on. But no, it's like, bam, I'm Reba McEntire now.
Can we intro quote that, please?
I'll try.
Oh, Jesus.
She's not getting any penetration, even with the elephant phaser.
Oh, golly.
Try that one, too.
Tremors references. Yeah. Tremors holds up so well.
Also, I want an elephant phaser to be a thing.
You have to break it open.
Actually, it actually shoots the plasma cartridges used to power the thing. It shoots batteries.
No, the beam is just so powerful it drains a whole power cell with every shot.
Yes.
It's got a backpack. It's just a ship phaser. You hold like a section of the strip in front of you, like a shield. Bwom.
That sounds like something Scotty would whip up.
Yeah.
Oh, so we can fire the ship's phasers anywhere.
I need a weapon. All I need is a wheelbarrow and a ship's phaser.
Or if you could, like, integrate a ship phaser into, like, Geordi's visor.
Like Black Lops.
We're just adding so much to Star Trek tonight. It's amazing.
I know we are. Well, this episode added so much to Star Trek. I mean, Klingon teenagers.
Speaking of music. So, the Doctor heads over to his home, and he comes home early, apparently, somehow. I guess the holodeck's always running this program in real time.
It's like an MMO.
So he walks in the door, and the Klingon kids are there, and his kid are there, and they're totally not smoking weed.
Or planning murder.
And so Joffrey responds, "Dad, what are you doing home?" And the doctor,
he's like,
doctor and says, "I live here."
Oh, shit.
So Picard wanders over, and he does awesome dad acting.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a knife in your hand, huh? What you doing with it?
He does look like a dad in like a anti-drug PSA from 1996. Now, kids.
Are you kids doing knives now?
Knives are very dangerous.
No, next thing you know, you'll be...
This is a table saw. Right. Now, I've seen a Klingon bloodletting knife before. Who's going to go murder a bitch?
Yeah, so apparently Klingons have a version of the knockout game, except it involves a knife.
Scott, have you seen Klingon arm wrestling?
No.
Okay, so what they do is, it's a lot like human arm wrestling, except that instead of a table on either side to slam the opponent's hand down onto, they prop up their knives.
Oh, wait, I have seen that. Yes, I remember now.
Also, remember, a Klingon pastime is just, headbutting each other.
Right.
Until someone passes out.
Teenagers. You fucking stupid in every species.
Okay, so the doctor kicks the Klingon kids out and says, "Don't bring weapons into my house. This is a house of peace. A house of love. It's a house of justice for every one of us.
It's a house of pancakes."
So the doctor puts two and two together and realizes that his son is about to go out and stab a bitch to look cool.
In fairness, it would make him look super cool.
That's true, it would. Almost as cool as smoking.
Yeah, almost. Gosh, I were cool enough to smoke.
I love the performance this kid gives because he is so snotty that I want to slap the shit out of him. He's like, you're not cool, Dad. You're not cool. You ain't nothing.
Yeah. Hmm? And like I said, the acting is actually very good in this for what it's supposed to be.
Humans are so lame. I'm going to be a Klingon now. I'm going to tattoo some forehead ridges on. They're totally going to respect me when I shank a whore on the street.
He's going to go running ridge face.
It's funny. He does use like cultural stuff. I was like, who are you to say the Klingons are worse? Well, you're just racist. I was like, whoa, geez.
Now listen, you. Klingons can stab whoever the hell they want to on their planet.
But in my house, you obey my rules. Well, you'll stab stay in your house.
Yeah. I'm a surgeon. I just cut people open with sharp object. Okay, well, let me rephrase this. Hypocrite.
This is like Hippocrat.
Also, he calls his dad a Patak. Holy shit. I can't believe he does that. I would have called my dad a Pataki. Would have kicked my ass.
So good, because this is the 24th century version of every family teenage drama bullshit ever. Perfectly translated.
Yep. I'm like, I'm telling you, I love this episode. I'm like, in this one, I'm like leaned forward on my sofa watching this, like my chin rested in my palms of my hands. Just
your mouth.
Too bad it has to be broken up. Too bad it has to be broken up by Tom Paris.
Yeah, well.
Scott, did you have your fiance watch with you?
Yes.
What'd she think?
She was bored.
Okay, then. I feel more justified.
Yes, you and somebody from the other side of the world who has English as a second language both found this boring. Congratulations.
All right. Validation.
So she's engaged to Scott, so I'm not certain her opinion is really that reliable.
No, that's what I'm trying to tell people. She's pretty cool, but her taste in men is terrible. Very suspect.
She needs tastier men, then.
Ooh. I'm going to get some pineapple juice. I'll be right back.
Are you going to go marinate yourself?
In a sense.
Ha 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 ha.
Sure, Fort Max.
Test your dick then.
Sure, Fort Max.
Okay, so after the episode, we have to explain some things to Fort Max.
It's not really a marinade, it's more of an infusion.
You see, sometimes it just sort of tastes like warm snot. And you want to improve that flavor, and pineapple juice is a way to do that.
The more you know.
Podcast.
I still think my version's better. Since it at least sounds funny when you sounds like it's a funny visual at least.
Well, especially since pineapple.
That's not what listeners are with the visual. I'm more concerned with, you know, the other sense of it.
Well, see, that's why Scott would be the one doing it.
We've gone places.
Where no man has gone before.
Oh, that's not true at all.
No, that's true.
All right, we're having too much fun. Let's kill the mood.
We got to get the mom's going to call.
Yeah, so mom calls like, oh, husband, the doctor just pulled their daughter in and she's dead.
Also, something happened to my hair and I look ugly again all of a sudden. I couldn't listen to what she was saying because I was like, why is her hair back to the way it was? Oh, my God, that's hideous.
She had a horrible lecturing accident.
The laser pointer was too powerful. It cut her hair off.
A phaser pointer. EPS powered.
Right.
Set phaser to educate. All right, but anyway, so, yeah. So, the daughter, surprise, got injured playing Parisi squares.
That never happens. That always happens.
So, apparently, she fell and hit her head, and she's got, what, chain hematomas?
Yes.
Sure, that's a medical condition.
Yeah, her brain and her vascular system are just hemorrhaging all over the goddamn place.
Like chain fireworks or something. Pop, 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 yeah. Pop, 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 pop.
Okay,
and
so...
like a slice of cheese on her head. I don't really get that.
I don't know. I assume it's supposed to be futuristic bandage. I don't know.
I guess it's covering up the spot where they were operating on her.
Yeah. I think they're just trying to like marinate the cheese in her flavor.
Ah, pineapple juice.
I can smell her spicy brains.
It's a good child. All right,
apparently the problem is not a brain injury, but apparently she just has super high blood pressure, and as soon as they fix one leak, another one opens up.
I think she's dying of a broken heart.
Just
like Padme.
All right, can you edit that out of the podcast?
No, you need to remember that that's canon.
Not for Star Trek, it ain't, bitch.
Luke Skywalker's mom died of a broken heart. She died from being too sad.
Yeah. Got too sad and I died. Boo-hoo.
All right, so the doctor's explained to mom, like, look, we operated and we kind of thought about it for a while, and yeah, now she's dead. She's dying. Can't do nothing.
Pretty much. They like operated for like 3 hours, did everything they can do. It's intractable. They can't fix it. And he even makes the statement like, well, in many ways, the brain's still a mysterious organ. Bitch, you've had 300 more years of science. You should fucking know how the brain works by now.
Look, they were busy going to space.
Yeah, because you can only do one.
Do you know how little space there is in the brain?
Is there anything less comforting than saying the doctor saying it's a mystery? I don't know how this shit works.
He's like the doctor from Family Guy. Hey, this looks like an X-ray.
You have the same terrible taste as JD, don't you?
Well, yes, if I drank more pineapple juice, I would have a very different taste.
Is exactly how JD would have answered that, too.
So
JD is still with us.
Yes.
So mom just breaks down and starts sobbing. And at this point, I'm like, you know, lean forward in the couch. I'm smiling and laughing, my chin on my palms, and the face slowly goes from a smile to this look of horror as I realize what the fuck is going on.
Well, mom's off to get a second opinion.
Yeah, to the other doctor who helped operate, because, okay.
Yeah, to the other doctor who helped decide, well, she's probably going to die.
Yeah. A doctor we never see, I don't think, do we?
No, nope. That's fine.
Yeah, okay. And then he goes back into the corner, and the directing in this episode is really good. He goes, walks around the center, sits in a chair, and leans his head up against the back wall, and there's this dingy light kind of up above him, and there's like an up angle. And this is one of the moodiest scenes I think I've ever seen. I love it. He kind of reaches down, like rubs his forehead, and just, man, what a great scene.
So the daughter wakes up, and she says that everything's so blurry.
Oh, God.
I'm afraid she started breaking into that song, because this was about the right time.
Okay.
But she doesn't, thankfully. Woo-hoo! So she can't feel her legs.
Oh, God.
And she can't see anything. She's blind.
Oh God. Oh, God.
So, yeah. Like, every sentence she says is, like, maximally designed to make you feel worse and worse and worse about her.
Oh, my God.
And here's where it gets interesting in a meta sense. Because the episode is doing to us what it's doing to the Doctor.
Yep.
It's having fake characters elicit a real emotional response in someone.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is kind of really cool to see that mirrored from the show to the audience at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I think that's clever as shit.
I agree. And again, this is one of my favorite episodes of Voyager now because of that.
And so the Doctor can't deal with this. And so he just ends the program mid-sentence.
Daddy, I love memory.
And smash cut to the Doctor whistling in sick bay. Kes walks in. So how's your family? Oh, done with them. It was great.
Yeah, that was an interesting experiment. Moving on. Yeah, he finished the program. I like how he puts it, too. I finished the program.
And Kes is all like, oh, I like them. The dinner was fun. And then he's got the best line, too. We're like, well, if I ever make another family, I'll be sure to invite you over.
Yeah. Yeah. Even Vessi was like, wow, that was a really shitty thing to say. Wow, the doctor's shitty. I guess here he is.
But he's the best kind of shitty.
Oh, yeah. Like, legitimately, he earned his shittiness. Uh-huh. And that's the whole point of character development, is you earn your shittiness.
See, if only the rest of the cast of Voyager could have earned their shittiness, it might have been a whole different feeling of a show.
Yeah, some just start shitty, like B'Elanna. Why are you shitty? I'm half Klingon. Yeah.
You know, the last half Klingon woman we saw in Star Trek was actually pretty cool. Alexander's mother.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
You okay there, Fort Max?
Sorry, Ken's haunting me again.
What's he doing in your throat?
Too much oil?
Too much pineapple.
Pineapple oil.
All right, so meanwhile, the B plot is still happening.
Oh, right, that.
Yeah. We're on a spaceship, I forgot.
The one thing I kind of like about the B plot is that it is so unconnected to the A plot. Like, they could literally be happening at two different weeks if it wasn't for that one scene of Paris getting a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, there's another one coming up, too, that connects them together pretty good. We'll get to it.
Anyway, so Paris is going to come out of this whole thing the same way he went in, through another eddy. Ugh, okay.
That is very unsafe behavior.
Yes.
Just guy's name Eddie. I don't know what it is.
So he's flying out, and he bonks his noggin, and they're trying to beam him out.
Why the heck isn't he buckled in going through space turbulence?
Because they're idiots. Also, they don't beam him. They beam the entire shuttle to the shuttle bay.
I mean, those shuttles are a valuable commodity. They only have a few of them.
A few dozen of them.
Now, there's one really cool undershot of Voyager flying and the eddy going off behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That didn't really justify any of this, but good visual there.
Point out anyway.
Yes.
Yeah, it is a cool ship shot. I'm a fan of ship shots. Oh, that's so boring.
Anyway, so they got Paris back on board, and the doctor is yelling at him for being an idiot.
Ah, so back to status quo.
Yeah, this time there's actually some emotional weight behind his ranting and condescension of the crew members. Mm-hmm. This was like made me uncomfortable. It's like, oh, geez. So, yeah, the doctor gets all pissy and he's like, oh, yeah, it's just like you to be reckless. Yep, just reckless endangering yourself to all the people that care about you, you piece of oh, crap, sorry. I like the look on Paris's face like, nigga, what did you say to me?
Were you apologizing?
Yeah.
And so Paris cracks the doctor and says, look, sucks what happened to your family, but you got to go finish that out because otherwise it was all for nothing.
And you'll be stuck at this moment forever. You'll never get any advancement past this. This will be where your family life will always be. And life doesn't work that way. And I thought this scene, too, with Paris explaining to the doctor how families work, I thought was excellent. Again, another excellent scene of real emotion and actually made sense. You know, this is like, oh, this is an actual life lesson that people need to learn.
And yeah. It's a weird thing coming from Paris, too, since, like, his thing is he has strained family relations. That's why he ultimately was in prison and ended up on Voyager afterward.
And lots of denial.
Yeah.
Right.
maybe that's why he recognizes it so easily.
Probably.
It's like, I can't fix my own life, but here, let me fix yours.
Well, that's the way it always works in life. You know that.
Oh, how fun is it that B'Elanna ruined the doctor's family and Paris saved it?
Oh, that is interesting.
I'm sure that was unintentional, but that's kind of fun.
Yeah. Because is this before they were an item?
Yeah, I think so.
That's why the scene in the galley was so wooden.
He was being so forceful about it.
Well, you mean aside from the fact that wasn't it always wooden even when...
Well, yeah.
There's zero charisma relationship.
Mm-hmm. There's more chemistry in Neelix's cooking pots.
It's all like
there's more chemistry in fanfics.
Ugh. Yeah. Again, this scene was just so great. Because Paris just lays it down on him.
As the doctor heads back to the holodeck and gathers the family up to watch his daughter die.
Now, it's interesting that because he ended the program, it just starts right back up at the instant he left. So, like, no time has passed for the people in there. So, I mean, it was like she was going to die within, like, minutes after the surgery. Oh, geez. I thought it was going to be like,
you know. Previous times when he's left the program, though, it ran in real time.
Well, he can transport out but not end the program.
So they just left it running the whole time?
Yes.
I more suspect that the holodeck was not engaged constantly, but the computer was programmed to basically simulate the simulation, for want of a better way to describe it.
Right, the logic was running.
Yeah, it kept rolling. It kept, you know, doing the D20s and figuring out, you know, where is this going to go in the time until the program's reactivated. But the doctor instructs the computer to resume the program from where it was last ended. So you could interpret that as telling the computer to disregard any intermediate simulation that was running.
Yeah, that would work.
That's a good point. Very good point.
See, like I said earlier, I try to make excuses for the bad science when I can.
Well, no, that works for me. Excellent job.
Because otherwise, they are running the holodeck for him constantly, even when he's not there, and that's impractical under the circumstances.
And rude.
Yeah, it's not like it's Deep Space Nine where they can leave, you know, Vic Fontaine on all the time because there's like six other holosuites people can use.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Vix is something just generally open to everybody, unlike the Doctor's family.
So the little girl comes to the realization and says, "So I'm going to die." And he has to look at his daughter and go, "Yep. Holy crap. My God, the look of pain on her face, like the realization that she's going to die. She can't see. She can't feel her legs. And she's fading away, like, within minutes. Oh, my God.
I mean, child actors, decent child actors are really hard to find. And they got a really, really solid child actor to do this part.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. They did. So mom comes in with the son who is, well, he's wearing a vest. I don't think he's wearing his Klingon clothes anymore.
He appears to have calmed down in the face of some cold reality.
Right. He brought her baby blanket?
Well, gotta do something, and they couldn't, like, have the ion mallet seen on screen, and also that might be kind of, you know, in poor taste, considering.
Yeah, because it still has their blood on it. Sorry, I forgot to wipe it off where we came in. Let me get that real quick. Oh, jeez.
Hit her head in the mat is code for, like, hit her head in the mat after someone walloped her in the face.
Right. She fell from three stories down in the center gravity column or something. Oh, jeez. So they're all standing there, and they're all sniffling, and then she starts fading away, and she's, like, describing her own death to her family. Oh, my God.
It's getting dark.
Jesus.
I feel cold.
Oh.
Or I would feel cold if I could feel anything.
If I didn't have this goddamn hot blanket on my chest, jeez. And she dies. She dies. We just watched a child die in Star Trek, guys.
We closed on that.
Yeah.
So he has a presence of mind to pull up the frickin' medical tricorder. What kind of doctor are you? Who needs to do an MRI?
She's dead.
Who needs to do an MRI scan when someone's that dead?
Just want to make sure before I throw her out.
Right. Yeah. Well, the thing is, the bed like tilts forward and slides right down into the incineration chamber. Starfleet's very efficient. And the family begins.
They don't even need an incineration chamber. Just, you know, have the bed slide down into a photon torpedo casing and.
Oh my God.
You know, it's burial in space. It's tradition.
So the family all cries and hugs. Holy shit. Okay. Alrighty.
Let's never mention this again.
Yeah. What? Okay. What the fuck just happened? And then that's it.
Presumably after this point, the doctor did decide to discontinue his program.
Huh. So, kid's dying, huh?
Yeah.
Just watched a child die.
Misadventures.
Yeah, that's a Holocaust. It was just a misadventure in Germany. Oh, well. Okay, guys, so,
So this is an example of how bad the holodeck can get.
When it's working correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is it not malfunctioning. This is it working perfectly.
And still being really fucking terrible.
But man, this episode was like, this was a very good episode and a very, very bad episode.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting that way. In that half of it's really awesome. Half of it's like, Jesus Christ, this is the worst bullshit.
Yeah.
And the half that is awesome is also Jesus Christ, this is the worst bullshit.
Yeah, can we go back to scanning anomalies? I like scanning anomalies.
Thing is, too, if you think about it, this episode probably will come in, like, incredibly under budget if they didn't have to do all the effect stuff for the B-plot.
Right.
Like, this could have probably bought a two-parter if this wasn't the 23rd episode of the season, but you know what I mean. It could have saved them so much money. They could have done something really spectacular afterward.
God. So, but it's still one of my favorite episodes. They added a lot of stuff to this. It had actual emotional resonance. Actually had character growth. And it was the doctor the whole time. What a fucking rad episode.
Can you imagine this episode if Robert Picardo was not such a good actor?
That would have been intolerable.
Yeah, it would have been.
Well, that's the thing. I don't hate this episode, but I get bored watching it fairly easily.
Okay. What would be a worse actor to put in this position? That wasn't on Voyager.
That wasn't on Voyager.
Yeah, because that's an easy answer there. Any of them would work there. But
Geordi LaForge.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
O'Brien. Miles O'Brien.
No.
Because shitting on O'Brien is always fun.
Yeah, they can make it work with O'Brien. Because that's the reality nobody really wants to approach, is that Geordi is basically a Voyager cast member in The Next Generation.
That's the cruelest thing I've ever heard. Man, I just watched a child die.
You didn't hear the child die, you watched, so this is still the cruelest thing you ever heard.
Oh, boy.
Oh, actually, I know a bit worse. Malcolm Reed.
Who?
Exactly.
Is it like a Star Trek character? I mean, I don't know who you're talking about.
See, they could have had a similar plot in The Next Generation where Worf is running a simulation to learn how to be a father for Alexander.
but we all followed
the same track pretty closely.
Right. We all would have cheered if Alexander had died.
Well, there was that episode in Season 7 where they tried to kill Alexander. Well, okay, Alexander kind of tried to commit long-term suicide, but, you know, same difference.
Wait, are you talking about Star Trek Season 7 or Kiva?
Actually, there is kind of a correlation there.
Yeah, it's kind of hard.
So, did Alexander try to commit suicide via time travel abortion?
Not abortion, but yeah, close enough. And Alexander from like 40 years in the future traveled back to Season 7, basically killing his past self was a last resort move, but yeah.
Because that's what you want to do, is create a grandfather paradox with your own self. That's good. Yeah, do that.
Yeah.
It'll be fine. Go back in time and kill yourself. Yeah. That'll be great for the time stream.
That's probably fine. Douche. You can handle Kirk. I can handle that.
That's true. I can imagine, like, time travelers in the future, like, you just flew around the sun? That's how you did it?
You have to understand, we went really fast.
No, we had to spend 1,000 years learning temporal mechanics and alternate history science and shit you can't even imagine. You just flew around a star? Yeah, it was easy. We do it all the time.
It was a slingshot.
Yeah. Great, yeah, it's named after the most primitive weapon ever created. Great.
I like to imagine the light-speed breakaway effect was never put into popular use because Spock is the only one who can possibly do the calculations.
Yeah, and he was smart enough not to share that with anybody either.
Well, it's not logical to give away your trade secrets.
That's true. Yeah, that's Scotty. Oh, aye, it's going to take a week to make these repairs. Oh, all done.
See, that just proves how bad of an engineer Geordi was. He gave accurate estimates.
Yeah, what a dumbass. He couldn't see why that was wrong.
No, he's blind.
Exactly. That's the joke.
Look, nobody has fought back the joke tonight. Somebody had to do it.
Well, yeah, I don't know how to come back out of the end of that episode. I mean, where do you go from there?
Voyager, you just pretend it never happened.
Yeah, because that was going to be my next question was this ever revisited?
No.
Nope. The next episode is Chakotay makes friends with the dinosaur.
Oh, yeah, the Voth. Yeah. Don't you just love the Voth, hey, Mickey? Don't you love the Voth?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Like, it's a great concept, but like so many Voyager episodes, the execution just doesn't live up to it.
It's so boring.
Yeah. That's one thing Star Trek's really great about doing, is taking a cool idea and then making it boring somehow. Speaking of which, I did watch the Warcraft movie this weekend.
It was better than I thought it would be.
Well, because I hadn't seen it, and I kind of owed it myself, and it was like $3 to rent, you know, on Xbox or whatever. So, the special effects were great. The sets were great. I didn't like any of the actors. And the story was just hollow. Oh, my God. I did not care about a single one of the characters at all.
The one thing I'll give it is it was lighter than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be very solid and dense, like a terrible Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. But it had a bit more brevity in it than I was expecting, which I think helped make it watchable. But not necessarily good.
No, it was watchable, I guess. But it's just I just didn't give a shit about any of the characters because they didn't build any kind of character personality whatsoever. It's like, I don't know who these people are, and I don't care about them at all. Even though that I do. So even someone who's a fan of this stuff still didn't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was disappointing. But the special effects and the sets and the props and everything were great.
It is a very pretty movie. I'll give it that.
It's damn pretty. But yeah, disappointing. And the thing is, I was hoping that it was going to make me want to play WoW again, and it didn't.
But it's probably for the best, don't you think?
It is. It is. I do not have the time to play WoW anymore.
I tried picking up again a few years ago. It's not the same.
I guess I'm lucky the MMO thing never really bit me.
Yeah, because, yes.
Like, I've even tried playing a few, and it does not click for me.
Yeah, be glad, man, because you would be the kind of person that it could grab a hold of, man.
Oh, no, see, I had that problem with Minecraft more. Like, when I really get into Minecraft for a while, you know.
You start building infinite chicken machines.
Right, but that's the whole draw of Minecraft for me. I can come up with these crazy ideas and actually put them into some kind of practice. Minecraft is not designed to let you build infinite chicken machines. The trick is to figure out how to work the system so you can have an infinite chicken machine.
Which is funny because that's one of the aspects of Minecraft that didn't ever appeal to me personally, was building those kind of machines and, you know, the redstone contraptions and all this kind of stuff. I mean, which is like, I would think that I would like that.
But can you build a machine that builds machines that build infinite chicken machines?
Theoretically, yes.
Yeah, I'm sure you could build a von Neumann machine if you really wanted to.
Like, you could build a structure that is set up to put all the blocks in position together to build a second machine. You couldn't have it like mass produce those machines in that way, but yeah, I mean, it is conceptually possible to do what you're suggesting.
Your mom is conceptually possible.
I'm proof of that.
Language. Very good.
So, next week.
Oh, God, what is next week? Tell me it's less depressing than this one.
Oh, it is.
It's Ship in a Bottle.
Oh, okay, good.
Moriarty Part 2.
Which one's Ship in a Bottle?
Moriarty.
Part 2.
Oh, yeah, okay, I know Moriarty. Like I said, come on, guys. It's been like fucking 25 years I've seen this shit. Okay, yeah.
But we just said it a second ago.
Like I'm paying attention to you.
The Revenge of Professor Moriarty.
Part 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, I remember this episode being annoyed. I remember being annoyed with this episode because it all started because they made the horrible mistake of saying create a character that could defeat Data, not defeat Holmes. And that was like caused everything. Really?
Well, you know.
I know. Oh, well, I'm looking forward to watching it.
There's a fan theory that Moriarty became the Doctor.
I don't know. I mean, they're too different.
Well, the theory basically goes along the lines of that when the D crashed, the Moriarty's program was turned over to Zimmerman, or the holographic scientist for whatever study.
Right.
And he used that as a base for the EMH and built out programs on top of it to build up to be the Doctor.
Oh, so he was like, it was the base of it. Okay, well, I mean, possibly.
Right. You remember in Equinox,
mm-hmm.
Where they had the evil Doctor?
Right.
Or whatever it was. I don't remember what episode. But where they'd stripped away his morality routines and became evil.
Yeah.
That would mean his baseline for the program was evil.
Oh, I see.
So.
Oh, love it. I'm going to put evil AI.
Calling it evil doctor is probably a little misleading. It was a moralistic doctor.
Right.
Well, yeah.
If you strip away all the things that are designed to give it morality, you kind of end up with that regardless.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it's just a fan theory. There's no way to even remotely prove it as being right, but it's kind of an interesting idea.
It's not like that whole Garrick in the Pale Moonlight thing, which is actually credible.
Yeah.
Mm.
With a different reading of the episode.
But I can see how they did them taking an accidental advanced hologram and using it as a base to build better hologram people.
That is one neat thing that I have to kind of let go of. You have Data, who's an artificial life form, positive heart brain, all this great stuff, doesn't do emotions. Whereas the Doctor, right out of the gate, had emotions.
Well, Lore had emotions. Like, Data's emotions were omitted on purpose.
Yeah. It's not that they couldn't do emotions. It's that Data didn't have the capability because he was missing parts.
Yeah, the emotion chip. Yeah, okay, that's true. You know,
Lore was
the emotion ship straight from a PS2.
Lore was built with emotions from the outset, and he turned evil, so obviously there would have been some reluctance.
Lore turned awesome.
You say potato. But, I mean, it's understandable there would be some reluctance in the subsequent model to initially install the emotional processing capability without further research, at least.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Like, after you upgrade to Windows 8, you're kind of hesitant to do it again.
And, you know, Soong was developing an improved emotion chip for Data over the interim, which is what he eventually ended up with in the movie.
Interim?
Yes.
It's like some GoBusters fanfic.
Ew.
No.
Sounds more like GoBusters porn, doesn't it?
Or enter it, Ren Kariyama.
Well, you know, he does look kind of smashing in a maid uniform.
Man, I am just emotionally spent after watching that episode again. Oh, God.
Well, go drink some pineapple juice and recharge.
Oh, I am. I need a few minutes, baby. That's all.
And we'll be back next week for the conclusion of Holodeck Month.
Woo!
And now the conclusion.
I wish there was a text-to-speech processor that sounded like Majel Barrett.
God, rad. Oh, yeah. And fuck Siri.
I mean, just think of how we'd abuse that for this podcast.
Oh, Smithers, you're so good at turning me on.
Would you mind bringing back the RFC computer just to fuck with someone?
I could. I'm disappointed I can't get that voice to work on Windows 10 now. Damn it, Windows, you ruin everything.
Pretty much.
Including, what now, 17-year-old jokes that only about 3 people left alive find funny.
I like how they're left alive. The rest of them, like, killed themselves or something.
Well, by the end of the year, there are probably just 1 left alive.
Why? What's happening to Kilby?
2016.
Oh, okay. I guess it's just a matter of time.
Yeah. We're all going down this year.
Oh, my. Good thing I'm drinking my pineapple juice.